Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. I am your host, Denise Griffiths. And today I am excited. I'm really excited to welcome back a friend of mine, and that friend is Jim Bouchard. My mission is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs and business people that I can find who are excited to freely share their business wisdom, tips, and actionable advice with us each week, and Jim is the perfect person for that. And he's helping me kick off the new year. So Jim is also known as Black Belt Jim. Jim Bouchard thinks like a black belt. Of course, he is one. And he'll help you think like a black belt, too. Martial arts transformed Jim's self-perception from former drug abuser and failure in his own mind to successful entrepreneur and black belt. And as a speaker and author of Amazon bestseller Think Like a Black Belt, which I have on my bookcase, by the way, autographed, too, Jim tours nationally presenting his philosophy of black belt mindset for corporate and conference audiences. He is a regular guest on TV and radio programs, including Fox News, BBC Worldview, and Fox Across America. Jim's resume is colorful. He'll tell you himself. It's very, very colorful and actually really fascinating. As a former television writer and producer, he has done everything from fitting pipes on submarines, mopping floors, pumping gas, and selling hot dogs to producing television commercials, fighting fires, boxing, playing drums in major concerts, hosting radio shows, and kicking for semi-pro football teams. And today, he is going to crown all of that by being on my radio show. Thank you, Jim. So anyway, you can find him on his website. On social media and on the Jim Bouchard Show. And in this episode, we're departing a little bit from past episodes. We're going to focus on mastery. It's a very important word. Jim maintains that many people cannot see the connection between personal and professional mastery and our ability to solve our larger social and economic problems. He will also explain why that is exactly where the solution lies. Jim, thank you. Good morning, and I'm so happy to see you here today.
Hey, you know, it feels warmer just even talking to you.
I shouldn't complain. I know. You are buried in snow, and my hands are freezing. You're going to hit me for this. Clobber me. You can do whatever you want. My hands are freezing. My feet are freezing. It's 46 degrees outside, and I have the windows open, and I'm complaining, so feel free.
We'll take it. That's about a 50-degree swing.
I know. And I'm like, geez, I'm cold. Well, close the windows, you ninny, but I don't want to. So
oh, my goodness.
I will sit here and shiver, but you are really, you're buried under a blanket of snow, aren't you?
I was till about 20 minutes ago. I was a snow removal specialist today. I have to get, you know... Barry, you have to help me with this. I've got to get so rich and famous I have other people that do that for me.
Well, until that happens, you can call it a snow removal workout and tell people that this is really the best way to get. Yeah, I mean, you can spin this.
There it is. There it is.
Yeah.
It is a
but
good
the,
workout.
Get rich. Seriously, get rich is better.
Yeah, there you go.
So tell me, what are you up to these days? It's been a while since you've been on the show. I've been really following along and watching. I mean, you have made some huge strides since last
Thanks.
We spoke. So tell them, you really have. I follow along, go, whoa. So tell our audience what you've been up to.
Well, a lot of traveling. Been able to share Think Like a Black Belt message with a lot of folks all across the country. And most of them have been pretty receptive. I aggravate some people, but, you know, that's going to happen when you talk about working hard and
right.
doing things like that. So, by and large, it's just been a thrill, and 2014 is gearing up the same way. And a couple of big projects in the works. One is the Respect Project, actually, that we should be revealing in a couple of weeks, and the Master's Mind, which is something we're putting together in conjunction with a company called OmniLearn, and you're going to hear really big things from them coming up. They're really they're poised to change the face of corporate learning for sure. Very interesting, but that's all I can tell you right now.
Oh,
we're going to have
okay,
a big
fine.
Reveal coming up. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Listen, tell people a little bit about yourself, something that I might have missed that they need to know. And tell people where they can find you. I kind of alluded to it, but be specific and tell people exactly where they can find you.
Thanks. Thinklikeablackbelt.org is the quickest way, or jimbouchard.org. That's B-O-U-C-H-A-R-D for folks that don't live in a French-speaking province.
Mm-hmm.
And, and
I do.
Yeah, that's the best way. There you go. Or just Google me, or you hook up with me on LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook. Easy to find.
Right.
Easy to find in all those places, yeah?
Right. And speaking of LinkedIn, you apparently are having some big conversation going on LinkedIn about personal mastery. Can you tell us about that?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, a little bit of a debate was stirred by my New Year's blog post, which really centered on this idea of mastery. You know, mastery, we've talked before, that's really what I've always been teaching. It's just that we're really, I guess, emphasizing that word right now because that's a word that's very well understood in the corporate environment. When we're talking about, black belt discipline and focus, we don't have to explain it much, but it's still a little more specific. When we talk about mastery, people get it right away. And anyway, what ended up happening was, I guess I was accused a little bit of taking kind of a narrow approach to the bigger problems. I mean, people said, we've got the economy to deal with. We've got, I also introduced the problem, what I believe is a dearth of genuine leadership. These problems that, folks think there's some sort of, global solution to it. And my contention is, no, that all the great problems and challenges we've ever faced have really been met by people, individuals, that were willing to explore the limits of their abilities and talents, expand on those limits, and to share that with others to bring them up to that level of mastery. So to me, mastery is at the root of solving all of these problems.
Oh, I agree with you. I'm not going to argue with you one bit.
Oh, that's too bad.
So
I didn't think you would have.
Well, we can find another topic if you want to fight. We can. But here's the thing. I agree with you, and I think that personal responsibility is such a huge thing. And I watch what's going on. I finally just turned off the news some time ago. I can't stand it. I get my news on the Internet, and I choose where I'm going to get my news, and I do my own research. But it seems to me like more and more people from all walks of life, it's not any particular subsection or section, are just saying, you know what, somebody else has got to fix this. To be honest with you, I had the TV on just really briefly before we jumped on. I wanted to check something. And there was a woman in an airport somewhere, and of course she had been delayed because of all the snow. And I mean, this is an act of God as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman, all that came out of her mouth was how angry she was.
Right.
Yeah. I just stood
and
there
blaming,
with my mouth open and go, you have got to be kidding me.
Right.
You're alive, you're warm, you're in a closed building, you've got access to water and restroom facilities.
Food,
what in
right?
the
yeah.
world do you have to be angry about? I wanted to just jump all over her. But unfortunately, this is from my perspective, Jim, this is kind of a prevailing attitude. Is this what you're saying?
Yes, and it absolutely strikes at the heart of what we're talking about because, first of all, I think a lot of this problem is caused by a long period of abundance that we had before things really started tightening up around 2008 or so. Those of my vintage, we've been through these cycles before. So, we know that we're going to survive and we know we're going to come out on top eventually. But a lot of people, when things tightened up, didn't know how to deal with it. They didn't have that experience. And we've had so much abundance and so much ease that, as you said, I don't have a problem with someone getting aggravated if a plane is late. I mean, we all go through that. But like you said, that particularly in a situation like this where we're talking about delays because of snowstorms, and imagine the outcry if the airlines flew those planes in those conditions and people were,
right.
were harmed, killed by it, right? That
exactly.
situation in Baltimore a few years ago is an example of that. So, you know, it's crazy. Folks have just, I think folks have by and large become so comfortable that any slightest inconvenience becomes an adversity. And that's where we have to really mm-hmm. clearly start to define this, right? Adversity and challenges are meaningful things. A little inconvenience is a lot different than that.
Oh, I agree. She must have used the word angry 5 or 6 times, and the more she used it, the more the hackles stood up on the back of my neck.
Well, she can, you know, she can stay angry as far as I'm concerned. And you
hit
it right on the nose. What good, to what end? And I think, you know, first of all, anger, like many emotions that we've talked about before, you know, the ancient masters in the martial arts tradition had a neat way of saying this. I'm going to paraphrase a little bit. So you can't control emotions. We can control our response to our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Anger is a natural emotion. It's something that comes up from time to time, and that's nice to talk about because it's one of the emotions that coincides with our modern view that psychologists define anger as one of the core emotions that we go through. But what are you going to do with it? You know, that's the point. You can take
right.
that inconvenience, that anger, and turn it into a rant like she did. Or, hey, you can use it and say, you know, there's other people that are inconvenienced too. Maybe we ought to band together. And, of course, that often happens, right, where people
mm-hmm.
start to band together, find something to pass the time or help one another in a time of crisis. I think
right.
one of the worst examples that we've seen in our lifetime was the absolute anger that happened after the Katrina storm.
Mm-hmm.
And right, how many people were just apoplectic that help wasn't coming fast enough, that they weren't getting enough. And in the middle of all that, I remember a very striking story, and talk about a master. This elderly woman who had been given one of the trailers to live in, and she was so grateful. The interview started with several younger people who were complaining that the air conditioning wasn't working in the trailers because
yes.
there wasn't enough electricity. Right? They had lights, they could cook and they could see, but
all
there,
right.
there just wasn't enough power there to drive the air conditioners. Well, and they also had, there was a shuttle that was taking them to a Walmart that was giving them free food. And all these folks were complaining. They got to her, and I'm sure by that time the interviewer is just expecting another link in the chain of litany there. Anyway, she looked and she said, I'm so thankful that they have this nice trailer for me to live in. And she
right.
had just walked back because she missed the shuttle bus. She walked back a mile from the Walmart. And they asked her about that. She said, oh, you must be tired. Why couldn't they have made it space for you? She said, well, I don't mind. She said, it was just so nice of those people to give us the food.
That's exactly right.
And
look, I live in that. You know, I live mm-hmm. equidistant between Hurricanes Katrina and Rita.
Right,
I mean, I live
right
smack in the middle of both of those, and they were practically back-to-back. And I saw
yeah.
an awful lot of what you're talking about, and it broke my heart. Made me mad. But it also
brings
just at some level made me go, oh, God.
Yeah. But see, that's
it
what I'm
awful.
Talking about. People are confusing oftentimes, and of course we're going to talk about it more in a professional context, obviously. But see, mastery is just that. It's understand. Mastery is a combination of all the things we've talked about in the past, the discipline, the focus, the perseverance, the courage, the confidence. And a woman like that, who is a simple woman, retired woman, an elderly person, she displayed every quality of an authentic master, not by...
And grace.
Right?
And dignity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's out there. We just have to cultivate it and make sure more people, and everybody has access to it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm accused of this being kind of a selfish endeavor, you know, the spirit of Ayn Rand, or, you know, and I have no problem with that accusation.
Geez.
But, you know, I say the thing is the least selfish thing you can do for other people is to make yourself better. When you make yourself better, you become a greater resource to everyone around you. And see, that's again, at the heart of why I believe this is such a powerful philosophy and a powerful methodology going forward.
I think what I'm struggling with, Jim, is the fact that people need to be taught it.
Well, there's a
huge disconnect there. It just seems to me like people would automatically get that, you know, gratitude and being grateful for whatever the circumstances are,
yeah.
you can always, you know, that silver cloud. I mean, I'm always looking for that silver cloud. or the silver lining in the cloud. It just doesn't occur to me to sit around and as we say down here in the deep south, boudet about it. You know, the more you whine and snivel and the more you just, I think you lower your, I don't even know how to say this. I think you raise your blood pressure and lower your emotional IQ. Does that sound about right?
It can happen, you know, but again, it's, I believe in very little, if any, innate talent or innate abilities. You know, there are certain genetic things that give us a predisposition to a certain skill or a certain talent, but all of that has to be cultivated, and our behavior certainly falls into that category as well. So it's often, you know, how we've been raised, how we're brought up, you know, what influences we have. And that's why this idea of mastery has to be, you know, it has to be, I'm going to say, indoctrinated early and often. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we do it with three-year-old kids in the martial arts program. And a few years ago, I don't know if I've ever told you this story, but I had a mom challenge me because one of the core principles of this of mastery is practice. That's all martial arts is, really. It's practice. It's what we do. It's who we are. And I make an argument that that's at the, you know, that's the secret behind any success in any endeavor. But at any rate, she challenged me on that. And she said, I think you're doing some harm to these kids by emphasizing practice so much. And you know, my response to it, exactly. I was ready to quit that day. It was terrible. I went home and, my wife Alex, my business partner, I went home and I said, what am I supposed to do? That's all. I said, does anyone else feel that way or is this an isolated case? And it was very troubling to me. And I finally, I got to the point where, I realized and really started to get vocal about it after that incident where that's the problem right there, a person who thinks that way, you know. We've got to get these things, we've got to indoctrinate these kids early. And I turned around and I did ask her after thinking about it for a couple of days. I said, because part of her contention, too, was the kids don't understand this concept. I said, well, I always argue that because even the youngest kids understand far more than they're given credit for sometimes, given the opportunity.
I agree, yeah.
Right? But the other part of it is I said, well, when do you want us to start? When the kids are 15, 16, and they, now it's too hard to change them? Or they've, developed habits that are so deeply entrenched that it's very difficult to reverse that trend. So, these things have to be taught early and often. On the flip side, it's never too late. And, I'm sure you've run into the same thing. The greatest people that I admire, particularly in business, are the people that embrace and really embody this idea of mastery in the sense that, that foundational phrase I always share. Perfection is not a destination. It's a never-ending process, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And people that embrace that and always want to learn and always want to grow and always want to develop and explore new opportunities, those are the folks that are going to make a difference. And those are the folks, frankly, that are going to get ahead in life. And let's face it, things aren't getting any easier, are they?
They don't seem to be, no. If you watch the news, which I do try to avoid, I have to say. It's like it's the same old every day.
Right, right. Well, that's one of the other criticisms that that was leveled at me, and I was debating. It was a lot of fun. And I do appreciate, by the way, if anybody's listening that challenges me on these things, I want you to. I mean, I appreciate that. It causes me to think, and heck, if I can't defend it, it's not a very good idea, right? Right. So, yeah, anyway, that idea that all we need to do is think positively. And, in fact, one person said, in effect, all we need to do is act like things are getting better, and they will. And I said, I've dealt with too many people over the years, and I've been through that myself. And I'm not talking about people that were blindly optimistic. I'm talking about people that really applied themselves, really made the effort, really did the right thing, but were blindsided by conditions and circumstances that were just bigger than they were. And that blind sense of optimism, remember, before the recession, how many of those genius experts we were listening to as we were investing in the stock market and all that were telling us that everything was great, nothing bad was going to happen. Everything was on the right track, right?
Mm-hmm.
So optimism, I'm an optimist. I'm a realistic optimist.
I don't want to be
off the cliff, right? Yeah, there you go. My optimism is tempered by a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. Let's just say that, right?
Exactly. And kind of going back to the stock market and everybody saying, oh, this is really good, everything's fine, it's never going to be anything other than it is. And I'm going to have to paraphrase this, and I'm not even sure this is attributed to J.P. Morgan, but I think it was. I'd have to look it up. But J.P. Morgan had a bit of a saying where he said, look, the minute my bootshine boy or my maid tells me that I need to buy this stock, I'm out of there. Because when everybody's – and I'm way wildly paraphrasing, but you get the message.
Right.
But, you know, basically if everybody's talking about the same thing, you might want to go do something different is what I took out of that. You know.
Exactly. And, you know, the stock market is one of those greater, let's say, organisms that, you know, people put a lot of place a lot of reliance on, especially as an indicator, mm-hmm. and many for their futures, for their finance and whatnot. And again, my contention is, you know, I think it's wise to invest some money in the stock market. I think it's wise to do it prudently, but it's also wise not to invest everything there or to depend on that.
Right. Because
that is an organism, and I use that word very purposefully. It has its own life. It has its own dynamic. And when things turn, conditions can happen there that you have nothing to do with, right?
Mm-hmm. No control at all.
Those of us who had lost a lot of our retirement there during the recession understand that. But it's what you can control is what's important. And what you can always control, no matter how bad things get, is you can take a look in the mirror, analyze your strengths and weaknesses, and get to work on both. And, you know, again, that's the spirit, I guess, if you want, behind this emphasis on mastery, because that is mm-hmm. something you control at all times. And then good things happen. But believe me, this isn't, you know, the secret part two or anything like that. This means hard work. And, we've had that discussion, right? You can't hang a little sign around your neck that says, I'm a master. I'm good. I feel good. And everybody mm-hmm. likes me, right?
Right. And the other sign says, kick me. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, right.
Jim, the thing, this it does, I'm telling you. But here's the thing about mastery, and I'm wondering if the mother of your student maybe didn't quite understand this, but we are taught, if we're properly educated once we head off to school, and even before. I mean, I was reading at 3. I remember asking my mother, you know, who taught me to read? She said, well, nobody.
Right.
And I said, well, why was I able to read? But by the time I got kindergarten, I was reading. And she said, well, nobody told you couldn't, which I thought was a great way to just, I would sit down with stacks of books and I just learned to read on my own. But the thing is, but going back to mastery, we are taught, again, if we're taught properly, we're taught to master handwriting. We're taught to master, mm-hmm. you know, what was it, the 3 R's or 4 R's or whatever it was. I never did learn much about arithmetic. I wasn't very good at it. But I hated it.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we are taught from very early ages to master things. Walking, riding a bike, riding our pony if we get a pony for Christmas, mm-hmm. reading, writing, arithmetic. We are mastering something new as children every single day. I see no reason why that needs to stop because the mother says, hey, you know, they don't understand this. They do understand it.
Well, here's the
we
punchline.
All understand it.
Yeah, here's the punchline. That woman is a public school teacher.
Oh, well, there you have it. and that's not, I'm sorry.
No,
I know there are
public school
teachers listening, but seriously, sometimes I wonder.
Well, I'm not pooping on teachers. I know a lot of fine teachers, but the system
has
changed quite a bit. And typical these days, and I've talked with parents who have done this, let's say there's a child who's, you know, facing a certain challenge in a class. It's easy right now, and I think it's the normal modus operandi for a mom or a dad to go and question the ability of the teacher, you know, mm-hmm. and say, what's wrong? Why can't the teacher get this through to my kid? And I'll tell you, having worked with kids for almost 30 years, I'd say 9 times out of 10 when there's a problem like this, sometimes it's the teacher's fault. We have examples of that. But most of the time, the kid's lazy. And most of the time, mm-hmm. when the kid is lazy, it's because the parents taught them to do that or they didn't hold them accountable. And, you know, that's what we're back to again. You're right. We have to learn.
And they become adults.
Masters. And they become adults.
And then they're going to leave the free world, which is very frightening.
Well, you know, I know our friend, you had Larry Winget on last show.
I did.
You did? Are you going to? I don't know, something like that. I thought.
No, he was the final show of 2013. You're the first one of 2014.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Yeah.
He's going to go on Fox in a few days, as you know, from this show, and he's talking about that idea that, you know, the kids are praised too much, praised too easily. I extend that and say many people are praised too easily, you know, and that praise can actually be damaging. We've praised kids for just going to school, not for embracing something that's hard. When something's hard, we want to make it easy for them. And I'll tell you the worst thing, a dear friend of mine who's produced six wonderful kids, but one day, he's a very funny man, very dry man, and he sat around, we were watching a football game one day. He said, you know what the worst thing is I ever did for my kids? And I said, what's that? He said, I gave them everything.
Oh.
I thought, wow. And he's got great kids, don't get me wrong. But I understood what he was saying, that we have this tendency to want to make things better. Sometimes the best thing you can do is to create the challenges. And you know, you want to do that in a safe, nourishing environment. But that's it. We only grow through challenges. We only grow by expanding. We only expand our talents and abilities when we can apply them, right? The old fortune cookie is that warriors only tested by the mettle of his opponent. So, you know, we need to find greater and greater challenges in order to test our abilities and to expand them. And it all goes back to, I should say this, and I don't know if I've told you the story in the past, but every time I present, I end up telling this story. My black belt, and you've seen it, if you go to my website, you'll see it, the one that I'm wearing in those pictures, was given to me when I got my first black belt. And my master said, and you can imagine what it looked like then. I mean, it was a deep, rich black. It was just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, but if you stay in the martial arts, if you continue this life, he said, you're going to tie and untie that thing thousands of times. You're going to get dragged around the floor in it. You're going to sweat in it. You're going to bleed in it. You're going to cry in it. And he said, eventually, it's going to wear out. And that's the picture you see now. You know, after some, you know, 25 years of abuse in the thing, it's worn out. It's frayed. It's faded. And as the outer black covering starts to wear out and fall away, underneath it, it reveals a core, which is a white belt. And see, that's to remind us always to keep what we call beginner's mind, which is truly the mind of the master. See, that's the conundrum. The master understands the process. Or one of my favorite masters, Professor Nick Sirio, used to always say, achieving a black belt, or I'd say even learning to think like one, is really the development of a good learning attitude. You learn how to learn. You learn how to use that process. So it's a continuing, never-ending process that you go through, and that's it. A master's never finished. A master's never completed. Hell, a master's a, you know, master janitor. I mean, when people become instructors in our system, they often have this grandiose vision of what the word sensei means. So I said, do you know what it means? They said, yeah, it means teacher. I said, nah, it means janitor. And I said, and if you get really good at it, the grandmaster, the Kyoshi, or whatever people use in their system, I said, that means master janitor. It's being able to embrace.
Is that true?
All
does it really mean that, or are you just making a point?
No, it actually does, because you have to clean up the place and do But, you know, having said that, right, and again, we'll go back and implant that in the business world. I think one of the great business masters of our time, sadly, he's not with us anymore. Sadly, he's not with that company anymore. Passed away was Sam Walton, the founder of Walmart.
Mm-hmm. Walmart, right.
Right. Up to the day he died, he insisted that his managers did time every year on the front lines, right, so they knew what was going on there, and they understood, had empathy, this is the most important thing for the folks that were working on the front lines. And he himself still rolled up his sleeves and stocked shelves and you know, helped load trucks and all of that. I mean, I just think that's the embodiment of what a master's all about.
And that makes perfect sense. It really does. Jim, I'd like to talk a little bit about discipline, though. And discipline seems to be either a scary word or a dirty word to some people.
Yeah, how come?
I don't know. I'm asking you. I honestly don't know, and I see it time and time again. You know, people just want to get from point A to point Z in a big old hurry. You know, they want to. I see it in my VA group. I have this fantastic virtual assistant, your virtual assistant group on Facebook. And most of them are just, they have a phenomenal mindset, but every once in a while, somebody will come along who wants every shortcut that can be handed to them. And I've already identified one of those people in that group. I'm about to boot her out.
Yeah.
Just because I don't want her bringing down the general tone and aggravating other people by saying, well, I don't know how to do this. Somebody help me. Somebody send me the document. It's like, honey, now you do it on your own. I mean, we're here to help, but we're not here to hand you everything.
Right.
So, and I don't see it real often in that group, but when I do, it's like, okay, but this one's going out. You know, I've given her enough time, and she's not going to learn, so she's got to go.
What you're really talking about there is power, and you know that's one of the neat things about sharing the message that I do is that if you had to limit me to one word as far as what martial arts is all about, and that's changed over time, but now, and I don't see this changing for the rest of my life, it's power.
Mm.
That's what
power,
we're really looking
okay.
for, power.
Not discipline?
Really, well, we're going to get to that in just a second, because power is your ability or capacity to act or perform effectively. That's all it is. When I was writing my first book, that I'm going to retitle and bring it out as Black Belt Power for Everyday People, but in there I was trying to explore that. I said, you know, I started it as a technical book for martial artists, because I was studying in different systems and I was looking for the commonality. You know, what are we after in the end? And it kept coming to power, to act more efficiently, more effectively.
Mm.
Now, how do we get there? That's the big thing. And really, in a nutshell, I'm going to give you the quick 101 version. We need a source. Every output of power needs a source. We need some fuel for the generator, so to speak. So for human beings, that's body, mind, and spirit. We need to take care of ourselves in each of those areas. Now, we need a generator. How we generate power is motivation and discipline applied over time. And then we make that power act, or we apply that power more efficiently, let's say, through balance, focus, and good timing. So at any rate, that works just as well in the boardroom as it does in the dojo. And when we're talking about discipline, see, that's the core. That's what's behind all of the different characteristics. Without discipline, we can't cultivate the other ones. Now, here's the big problem. People don't know really what the heck it is, and even disciplined people sometimes don't think they are. So we have to, you know, really assess that, make sure people understand. For instance, if I ask the C-suite audience, and I always do, raise your hand if you're a highly disciplined person. I want to make that distinction. And about half the room usually will raise their hand. And my response is, well, what the hell's wrong with the rest of you? Every hand should be up if you accomplished
right.
what you did. Right, if you were in that corner office, you're obviously disciplined. So that's how I started to learn that it's more of a definition problem. Or people will see themselves as disciplined in one area of life, but not in others. And it doesn't work that way. Our lives are not compartmentalized that way. Our time can be. But if you become a more disciplined person, you're a more disciplined person, period. That's going to work for every aspect of your life. And discipline itself, very, very simple. It's the act of developing meaningful and purposeful habits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's important.
I agree.
Because that can be good or it can be bad. When I was a drug addict, it became a purposeful effort. Everything I was doing in my life was to sustain that habit, you see. It wasn't going in a positive direction.
And you were very committed to it.
I was very committed to it, right? I developed a level of comfort there.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to identify whether your habits are destructive or constructive. But from there, you know, that's all it is. And then we can sit down and begin the process of deciding, based on the talents and abilities we have now or the ones we want to develop, you know, what habits do we need to install? What habits do we need to offload, get rid of, in order to go in the direction that we want to? And that's the simplicity of discipline. It's simple, but it's not easy, is it?
No, it's not. I'm a very disciplined person, but
you are.
You know, yeah. I do recognize that I have a bit of a perception problem with it, because sometimes I think, oh my gosh, Denise, what did you get done today? And I have to actually stop and enumerate
yep.
everything that I got done, and then I'm tired because I got a ton done.
Yeah.
But then there's always something to do, and if you have a squirrel mind like mine, I have a very disciplined mind, but I'm always searching outside of my own boundaries. And
right.
I'm always saying, okay, I want to do this, and I want to learn that.
Yeah.
And, oh, gimme, gimme, gimme. I need to learn more things. I need to be more disciplined. I need to use my time. I beat up on myself a good bit because there are so many things that I want to do that, disciplined as I am, I still don't get everything done in one day that I want to get done. But that's okay,
well,
because the next morning
it is.
I wake up and go, ooh, we're going to do, now I have more opportunities.
It is, but that's too, where you're kind of crossing over into the area we talk about when we're dealing with focus, you see. You hit it exactly right. People can. There's people that are extremely disciplined but don't get anything done. They just never
move
in the right direction.
I get stuff done. I just want
you
more
do,
done.
Yeah. Well, there it is.
Am I greedy?
You're a bad example.
Go ahead,
you get so much done that, I mean, most people would throw themselves off a building trying to keep up with you. But
other people have said that. It must be a common perception.
Yeah, but you brought up something that a lot of people feel, and that's that, you know, sometimes they feel like Fred Flintstone. Remember when his little feet were going, but the car wasn't moving anywhere? And like I said, that's more of a focus issue. So as we start to understand our talents and abilities and we start to apply those, you know, in a meaningful and purposeful way, create those habits, that's where it becomes important to focus. And focus means getting rid of, you know, you can't force focus. I mean, have you ever tried to just sit down and grind yourself into a state of concentration?
Especially when I'm trying to write something and it just doesn't work. That dreaded blank page, and I get them. It's like, oh, man.
But you know what
I do, Jim? I instantly get up. I walk away. I go outside with the dog. I might dig a hole and move a shrub. I might, you know, go out into my garage and, you know, jump around on my rebounder like a little kid. Half of my garage is my home gym. I walk away from it, and I refocus not only my attention, but I refocus my physical energy.
You know what's interesting about that, too? What you've done there, and really, because focus is a process of letting go. It's a process of letting go mostly of distractions and detractions. And what happens is that the dominant noise, right, we turn down the noise, the dominant noise when we're stuck is usually, it's going to sound strange, but this is why we study that yin and yang symbol so much. A and B don't necessarily cancel each other. Sometimes we're so hyper-focused on the block, you see, on the distraction. For example, when we're writing, we can sit there and say, I know I need an idea here. There's something here. I'm just not getting it. And no matter how hard we try, it's not going to come because that thought alone is blocking the good idea. But by taking a walk, right, by offloading just that moment, right, that obstruction, then it clears our head to operate. But I want to make sure that you feel good about this because the way that you think, I call that Renaissance thinker. And there's nothing wrong with that. I was just talking with one of my clients about that. She was very worried that, you know, she was very scattered in her thinking. But I said, but you get an awful lot done. I said, you're a very creative person, an innovative person. Now it's just a matter of, at any given time, right, deciding what you're going to work on. And part of the discipline factor, that, you know, and focus and discipline are two parts of the same whole. You can't have one without the other. But when you sit down to manage your time, that's when you have to make a conscious decision. Yes, this might look interesting and exciting, and I'll probably get to it soon, you know, but right now I need to put this aside, right?
Exactly. And I had to train myself to do that, you know, because my brain is, it doesn't shut down. You know this, it does not shut down. So
no,
I had
brain,
to actually...
That's naturally that way. That's the way the human brain is. See, people that fight that don't understand it, and modern neuroscience has been so good about tapping into some of this. I know they're just scratching the surface, but... Our brain is wired for distraction. It's a survival mechanism. That's what kept us from becoming food when we were out hunting. You see, right?
We're looking at the fight or flight, right?
We want to get the elk, right? But there's a tiger sneaking up behind us. So our brain is wired to respond to that distraction quickly. We have to train ourselves to let that go. Of course, out in the bush like that, right? Once the danger was gone, we were naturally also able to just let that go. We didn't stay in a state of anxiety, in a state of fear and danger. So that's something that we have to work on as modern people because so many of our fears, anxieties, and dangers are not, I won't say they're not real, but we create that reality often in our minds more than it is physical and tangible. And unfortunately, those are the harder ones to let go of, aren't they? But
they really are. And I tell people this all the time. You know, I mentor people in my VA group. I have a small group mentorship program going on. And a lot of it is mind junk. It's just brain junk. You know, this is what's holding you back. This is what's going on. And I will tell people, listen, your brain is your one worst enemy right now. I want you to, every time you have that negative thought, the one that you just told me about that I can instantly identify as bunkum, I want you to sit, apishne yourself, and I tell them, do you know what apishne is? Apishne is when somebody comes up behind you and they flick the earlobe. with their finger and thumb.
I hate that.
A pishne. I know. But I do it to myself. Whenever I catch myself indulging in or engaging in, because that's exactly what it is, in stinking thinking, I will pishne myself and make myself stop and examine the evidence. And if there is no evidence to support that piece of crap that just went through my mind, it's gone. But it takes discipline and a willingness to understand that you have to do that.
You know what's really interesting about what you just said, too, is that you took and you created a physical cue. And that's an important part of this process. You know, if I'm working with a group and we're working specifically on, especially on focus and discipline as components behind mastery, that's one of the things we're talking about. And I want each person to think about it for themselves. I mean, I know there's folks that teach these 7 steps, 9 steps, 12 steps, whatever. My steps might not work for you, right? What's important for you, in fact, that flipping
find something
thing,
that does. Yep.
Oh, my God, that I ask Alex, I can't, she does that to me. I can't stand it. I don't like people touching my ears. So at any rate, she folds my ear. That's her. But at any rate, whatever works for you, but if you can identify that and anchor that, and see, that's one of the neat things that translates. I mean, so many things from martial arts just translate to other areas of life so smoothly, and you don't ever have to punch or kick it. Now, you just have to understand the process. Long before there was anything like NLP or any of these psychological devices, martial artists understood that, you know, that there was power in anchoring a thought, a process to a physical feeling and a physical sensation, and often an emotional one. So that's part of the reason we make all those silly noises when we're hopping around. But at any rate,
I wondered.
Yeah.
I was like, what in the heck are they saying? I know there's a language there. What is it?
Find what works for it. Be kind to yourself. I mean, I still see it, and I do it from time to time, but I caught somebody not too long ago, just a couple months ago, whacking himself in the head with the heel of his palm. Every time he missed something, you know, he'd go bam like that, and I said, I understand what you're doing. You're trying to, you know, remember that, but, you know, being a person who suffered the effects of multiple concussions, I said, I wouldn't be whacking myself in the head too much.
No.
You can find
not
a
good
way to
idea.
Do that. Right.
I know. But to go back to what you were saying about this lady earlier, that really grabbed my attention, because it's easy for me to do the same thing. My brain is always going, always, always, always going. And for the longest kind of time, I would say, Denise, why don't you sleep? I don't sleep all night. I'm a cat napper. I have been all of my life. You know, I sleep in fits and starts. And I'm perfectly fine with that. I don't consider it an insomnia problem at all. Just my brain is always going. I have these very vivid dreams. I wake up and I will write them down sometimes, because sometimes, one time I wrote a book. It was a fabulous book. I couldn't wake up enough to get it on paper, but I still have the idea for it. But here's the thing. My brain works kind of the same way hers does. I'm always, ooh, 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 squirrel, oh, gosh, God. But I have learned to discipline myself over time to just grab a quick note, a sticky, or, you know, grab my iPhone, wherever, and make myself a note. Okay, Denise, you had this really great thought. Here's the genesis of it. Now get back to work. And I will circle back around to that at the end of the day and examine it again. Was it a good thought? Was it something I want to work on? Okay, now it's on my list for tomorrow. Again, it's a discipline thing. You can't just stop, start all day long. You've got to define how you're going to deal with these random thoughts. Because thank goodness they're there. I mean, what would you do if you didn't have them?
Exactly. And that act that you're talking about, and in fact, I just came across a very interesting article that was, you know, talking about these flashes of enlightenment. And again, borrowing from the Asian traditions, enlightenment is just, it's a flash, but it's a moment that has a lot of stuff leading up to it, I guess is the best way to say it, right?
Yeah, they don't just come out of nowhere.
No, the moment of enlightenment is when you notice, it's the result of all the work and the process that's been going on. Two of the masters that I study very intensely these days, and, you know, fortunately we have in their own words, their own writing we can study, is Benjamin Franklin and Einstein.
And love them both. I've got Benjamin's book open on my Kindle right now. One of
the
Benjamin Franklin, his autobiography.
Oh, that's one of the ones I recommend all the time, absolutely.
He did exactly
what you were talking about. Einstein did the same thing. These little snippets, these ideas that are not just flashes, remember, they're part of your brain's process. But they recognize that, you know, those need to be notated, however you do it. You know, you and I, I think, are very much, I call us bubble thinkers. There are linear thinkers and there are bubble thinkers. Those mind, I use a mind mapping program all the time. I'm looking at a printout right now of one for one of the book projects I'm working on. Mm-hmm. And I don't worry about the order. I don't worry about if it makes sense. I just get those bubbles down. And then, of course, with a mind mapping program, you can draw the connections and rearrange it and make sense of it later. But that's how people are able. You know, innovation and creativity to me is not an accident. That's a discipline as well. I think Stephen King said that so nicely. He said, I think it was in his book on writing, but I've heard him say it in interviews as well. He said, you know what the key to great creative writing is? It's writing a lot and reading a lot. And that's it.
It's true.
That's the definition of mastery.
Yeah, yeah. But I have to tell you what I did this weekend. You're talking about, you know, the bubble thing and mind mapping. Mm-hmm. I do both of those. But, you know, I will be focusing very intently on something that's high tech and high level, and all of a sudden this brain thought comes in. I'm like, squirrel. I write it down and I go back to focusing.
Right.
So it's not a problem. I don't lose it. I don't abandon it, which I think is very important. But I also don't allow it to really disturb me. I can go back and examine it again later. But I had one of those moments. You know, I deliberately took time off over the holidays, just refused to come into my office, refused to respond to email. Just I refused. I was down. I was down for the count. And I had a very quiet, deliberately very quiet Christmas as opposed to what Thanksgiving was and New Year's was. But Christmas was very, very quiet. And I took my iPad, and I'm always downloading books. I have about 3,000 books on my Kindle or devices wherever I'm going to read them. Most of them are free. I'm always on the hunt for free business books on Kindle. And I was reading one, and I can't remember the title now, but I was in the bathtub, which is my think tank. I'm in the bathtub, and I'm reading this book about writing a book. And honestly, I don't really want to write this book right now. It's on my list of things to do. But you know, I'm going through all these lists of books, and that one grabbed me. Jim, this book, whatever it was about this particular book, just caught my brain on fire. And I had to literally open up an email to myself and just start talking, because you can speak on your iPad. And I was just constantly dictating notes to my email, and I finally said, it's a mess. You ought to see it. I can barely read it myself. But because I didn't spell check, I didn't, you know, punctuation, I didn't worry about it. It was all stream of thought. Look, I got halfway through that book. I had to get out of the tub and come into my office and go old school. What I did was I grabbed that email, I printed it out, then I grabbed a pad, my last ruled pad that was in my closet, my office closet. I grabbed a pad of stickies and a pen, and I shut the door. Went out and sat in front of my fireplace for 2 days. And what I did was I took the stickies, and I just made them look like tabs on a filing system.
Right.
So down the side, there's DeniseGriffiths.com and my Virtual Assistants Academy and the different things that I've got going on in my head. Jim, that pad is chock-a-block full. There is not white space anywhere on it. For 2 days, I brain-dumped into that pad. No high tech about it, but I just brain dumped. Now I will take it and I will put it into mind mapping and organize it. But no thought went unnoticed. I mean, I really concentrated for 2 days in front of my fireplace on just getting all of it out of my head and onto paper. It's a mess. It's going to take some doing to make sense, but it's there.
It's not a mess at all. It's not a mess at all.
It's
that's
there,
the big thing,
so.
Right? Master Denise, for sure, because what you're doing, again, if you study the life of folks like Einstein and these people, we hold, you know, as iconic. I have to emphasize, though, too, mastery is not, not reserved for the masters. This can be done at any level, no matter what your pursuit, your interest is. If you're happy being a fry cook at McDonald's, and that's what makes you happy, and you just satisfies your needs, that's great. All I'm saying is then be the master fry cook at McDonald's, right? Do the absolute, and you know there's people that do that, right? They're the absolute best that they can be at what they do.
Well, Mark Sanborn wrote Fred Factor, he's talking about exactly that.
Exactly, right. I know Lao Tzu beat him to it about 1,600 years ago, but that's okay. But that idea of being able to sit down in that creative space, and you know, oftentimes I say to people, I have guitars in every room that I work in. Every room in my house is guitar up in my office. There's a guitar in my library. There's a guitar down in my rec room. because sometimes, well, I enjoy that. Beside the point, that's my passion. You know, it's something that feeds me. But if I'm working on something else and I'm stuck or I'm just brainstorming, sometimes I'll just go over and do that. Now they've isolated that when the brain is engaged in a creative process like that, and it can be anything. It could be painting. It could be writing. It could be music. It could be, you know, whatever floats your boat. Crafts, arts
singing,
and crafts.
You know.
Right? Yeah. But
I just sing my heart out.
Exactly. Your brain operates a certain way when you're going through that process. And music is a powerful one for a number of reasons. We could do a whole show on that. But that's why when you come back to your work, see, that's not a distraction. People will say, well, that sounds like a distraction. No, it's not, because you're allowing your brain to operate in the space that it's meant to. And then when you apply that, right, when you get it operating in that space and you bring it back to your problem, that's why the problem is often, you know, the solution's there almost without conscious thought. But that idea, you know, with all these different ideas that you're putting down, see, here's another great barrier to people's mastery. They want to go, and you said this about somebody else earlier, they want to go instantly to the solution. They want a shortcut. But they're ignoring
somebody in my VA group, yeah.
Yeah, the process of that organization is hugely powerful. That's how Einstein came up with the theory of relativity. He had this idea. He had a little problem. I don't know if you've ever heard this story, but I think it's just remarkable the way this all happened. He just had a thought one day. He wanted to know what it would be like if he were able to, I think he used a motorcycle, I can't remember, but anyway, that if he were riding a motorcycle with speed of light, what would things look like? You know, from that perspective, and started to bring the story back from there. Now, over the course of several years, he had all kinds of different random thoughts and different, you know, went down different avenues. But in the process of organizing those thoughts, and of course, a mathematician, that's what they do, right? We can see their process. They work through the formula. For the rest of us, yeah, it may be a bunch of sticky pad notes. It may be a brain map. It may be just however you do it. It doesn't really matter. But don't skip over that process. That process of organizing, which a lot of people get really weirded out about, don't they? They say, I'm not getting anywhere.
They do. Right.
Well, yes, you are getting somewhere, and you may be, in that process, you may see connections you never would have thought of if you were just going directly to the to-do list, if that makes sense.
And it does. And I'm a big to-do list person. I mean, I am a list maker. My lists are color-coded.
Yeah.
They're a thing of glory. But this was very different because I made the deliberate decision not to come in here and open a mind map and open some documents and a spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm.
I deliberately worked from the bottom up.
Yeah.
Instead of putting it into, you know, what kind, because I would have lost it. And I had sense enough to know, knowing how my brain works, that if I tried to do it the proper way, you know, make it all nice and, you know, make your headings. Yeah, but that's normally how I work. You know, I'm a very systems-oriented kind of gal. But this time I said, no systems. This is coming straight from my gut. And it did.
Yeah.
And I want you to know, when I finally, you know, left my fireplace after two days and nights, I didn't sleep a whole lot. In fact, I know at one point I fell asleep on the floor in front of my fireplace. And I only woke up because I was cold and needed more wood. And right back to it I went. All I know is that it was incredibly cathartic.
Yeah.
And now I'm looking at 2014, and I'll be honest with you, Jim, I could care less about New Year's. I know it's a traditional time to kind of reflect, but the way I work and the way you work, it's all one big blur. You know, we just go from day to day to day. It's all a blur.
Wednesday, right?
What month is this? You know, I remember putting on Facebook the other night, why didn't somebody tell me it's almost midnight? I need an adult.
Somebody make
me go to bed. But normally the New Year's, I could care less. This year I am so excited because I know where I'm going. And I know what I'm going to accomplish, and I know how I'm going to do it. I'm very excited. And that's something new for me.
Sometimes
you just have to take that time. It's a new one for me, I'll be honest with you. And I'm constantly getting those little flashes of insight or wisdom, and you know, every once in a while, have you ever done this, Jim? You look around and go, who said that? Where'd that come from?
Right.
I
don't worry about the voices in my head. It's the voices in your head that concern me. So
Well, but mine are fun.
There you go.
But, you know, it's just, you do have to pay attention to this. So to go back again to your lady, I would suggest to her that she just find a way to harness her thoughts without disrupting her day.
Oh, the client, yeah, and she's doing very well with that. But, yeah.
Oh, good.
The other, I thought you were talking about the other lady, our school teacher friend. In that case,
No.
I wish I knew where she was right now, because I'd bring her a copy of our friend Larry's new book, Grow Up Hair.
Grow Up Hair.
Say, girlfriend, you gotta
got
to get a life, man.
I'm always astonished by people who think like that, but yeah, that's what makes the world go around, right? We can't all be the same.
Well, there are people who are satisfied with average, and there are people who are satisfied with waiting around for other people to do for them. You know, you and I are not like that. I really strongly believe that most people are not at the core, and it's up to us to, you know, help them unlock whatever they've got as far as talent and ability, because that's really where it is. You can wait around for a savior, but those guys are usually a long time coming.
Well, they are. Honestly, once they get there, is that really what you want?
Yeah, nobody knows who they are when they're alive anyway, right? It's only until 2,000 years later you realize who they are. So the big thing is to, you know, do for yourself and to experience. I mean, I don't know. And one example, we were talking about books. And when people ask me to recommend books, the number one book I always recommend for business people and everybody is Zorba the Greek. And
really?
They want, yeah, and a lot of times people have seen the movie, and I said, yeah, no, the movie's good. The book is even better. But the whole thing is this. You know, people are looking so much for those systems, like you said, the shortcuts, the method, the seven steps, the nine steps, whatever. What Zorba talks about is the process of enjoying and experiencing life to its fullest, you know, to be that. And he's working with a person. They're entrepreneurs, so it has a direct connection to. But at any rate, that's what it's all about, to understand the process of life and living, and that's what we need to get back to. I mean, it's not about being safe. It's not about waiting for other people to do for us. We've got, as far as anyone can really prove, and I'm not trying to challenge anyone's faith here, but as far as we really, really can prove, we got one shot at this. What do you want to do with it?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
I do. Believe me, I do.
If there is a meaning for life, right? If there is a meaning for life, it's what you decide it to be, as far as I'm concerned. So, I don't know. I'd just as soon be out there taking swings. Hey, we win some, we lose some. I've had my share of losses. I'm sure I'm going to run into some more. But you know what? I own those. Those losses are mine. And there's always great things that come out of them. And some of those experiences, even in the worst cases, in hindsight, are some of the best experiences that I've ever had. They're places where I really learned how to grow and develop and made myself stronger. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
That's why
absolutely.
You need to read
Zorba. I will. You know, I didn't see the movie. I'm not much of a movie watcher. I tend to fall asleep. I don't know why. I just do. I fall over and drool. I'm not a good movie teen, trust me.
You'll enjoy the book. I
will read the book. Yeah, I will definitely read the book. Jim, do you know we're out of time almost? We do this every time. This has been the quickest hour this year, I'm telling you.
Oh, thank you so much. We'll have to do it again sooner this time. And of course, we're going to start up our show again, too, so we'll have you on real soon.
Oh, good. I would love to. Well, listen, tell people one more time where they can find you.
ThinkLikeABlackBelt.org, or just Google Jim Bouchard and hook up with me. Please reach out. I really enjoy meeting new people.
And tell people what it is that you're going to be doing this year very quickly. I know you've got some big things in the works.
Well, the two big things right now, so we're doing a lot of work in this mastery space, so if you'd like to introduce this concept to your organization, please give us a shout. I do anything from a keynote to a full-day training. And the Respect Project, which is going to be very exciting because we're really going head-to-head to try to try to reduce, I don't believe we can eradicate, but try to reduce the incidence of workplace bullying, harassment, and incivility. So, and those are the two big areas I think we can really focus on and make some major changes around. So,
right. And I know that this bullying issue, I've been following along with you and John Henson and Dr. Jack Singer, and you've had some big conversations on Facebook around bullying, not just children, but, you know, just everywhere.
Right.
So I'm guessing that this is where this came from?
It's a $300 billion a year problem in America alone. And it's
good Lord.
Yeah, if we should do another show on that, because within 3 or 4 minutes, I can show people exactly. They'll look at it and they'll say, "Oh my God, that's happening in our office." You know. So.
Yeah, yeah. I'm definitely have you come back and talk about exactly that, because it.
Wonderful.
Look, it's an issue, and you know, honestly, sometimes, and I don't know if you've given this any thought or not, but sometimes we bully ourselves.
Don't we?
I do. I'm the biggest bully I know
sometimes. Yeah, that's been a challenge in my life ongoing. And I don't know. It is what it is.
I was standing in my kitchen. I'm going to give you a mental picture here. I was standing in my kitchen. I was beating up on myself the other day about something.
Yeah.
And I remember standing. I whipped around and I was talking to Invisible Denise. I had my hands on my hips and we were going to duke it out. It's like, you can't tell me what to do. I mean, and after a while, of course, I was laughing myself silly, but I was really beating up on myself.
We just have
to
keep remembering.
I made it stop.
Is not a destination, right? We're a work in progress. Yeah.
Well, I told her. Well, listen, Jim. It was ridiculous. I caught, you know, I thought, man, if I could see myself in a mirror right now, holy cow.
As long as you're not actually punching and kicking yourself, you'll be okay.
No.
All right.
No. I had a stern talk with myself. Jim, thank you so much for being here. I love having you on the show. It's always a great pleasure to chat with you. And I definitely want you to come back and talk about bullying and the Respect Project.
Thank you so much. You know, it's a treasure to have you in our life, and we just have to do it more often.
I know. Well, thank you so much. I love you and Alex both. Well, listen, the show is going to be available for download in about an hour, and you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Jim Bouchard, and I will see you next week. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.